Evening, one and all. Yes, I'm back. I'm back from my little vacation. Well, it's basically to see family and stuff like that. Got back on Sunday night, and I was just telling my guests because I wasn't that far from him at one time. Well, sort of not far anyway. But yes, just had a few issues, shall we say. Lots of issues going over, lots of issues when I was there, and lots of issues coming back. But I am back, and I did manage to see most of my family, though not all of them, unfortunately. Ran into a few issues because in the UK at the moment, well, I think it's better, they have in a panic on petrol, on gas. Just like the old toilet rolls panic. There's not that there isn't enough of it, but all of a sudden everybody panics. Somebody sort of announced that, oh, because of the truck drivers and the European stuff and everything, there's going to be a shortage of petrol. And of course, people were dashing to filling up the thimble, you know, in case they travel 2 yards, sort of thing. So a lot of issues traveling anywhere. A lot of garages run out of petrol. I think the army were brought in at one time to sort of help transport them. But, you know, I did most of it, and I am back now and ready to go. And so is my guest. My guest is here with me. He's actually in Ireland. So he was close when I was there. Anyway, I better introduce him, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Jude Morrow. Hi, Jude. How are you doing?
Hello, Barry. I'm really, really well, and it's 11:30 at night here now where I am, but right, the energy has just given me a massive boost. like a cup of coffee times 50.
Well, there you go. Well, you see, the thing is, you know, with all this planning you're doing at the moment, you must be used to these late nights, because I know you're planning a trip over to America, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, for my kind of motivational speaking tour, visiting a couple of groups and schools and stuff. In the second week of November, hopefully, fingers crossed, if there's no other kind of obstacles or hurdles thrown in my way between now and then.
Isn't it like end of this week or something like that, they change a lot of the travel rules to make it easy? I'm sure I heard something like that when I was over there.
Well, to make it easier, I mean, if we were going to talk about the kind of COVID restrictions and rules and travel and everything...
Right.
This would be a 5-hour special.
You're right. And I could add another 6 on top of that. anyway, let's sort of go back to you, because you've was it 2001 at the age of 11? You know, you were diagnosed with autism, or I'm not sure if it's straight with that, but hasn't stopped you, has it?
It hasn't. I mean, I was born autistic. I'll be autistic until the day and hour I die. And being autistic never held me back, ever. It never held me back. And it doesn't hold anybody back. Now, hear me out. I know that there'll be listeners that will be gasping. And please, I invite you to pick your jaw up off the floor. For me, being autistic didn't hold me back. Jude Morrow held me back. I held me back because I didn't accept it. I didn't embrace it. I didn't feel comfortable with it. I didn't tell anybody about it. And I suppose wanted to keep it like private and keep it kind of internal. And I suppose it caused me to almost become somebody I wasn't. And that's very common among all autistic people, because the public perception and the narrative is just so profoundly negative that we do find it difficult to accept ourselves for who we are. And I was exactly the same until I was around 25. I'm very loud and proud about being autistic now, but I wasn't always.
Because that's a big thing. It's like every, you know, like a lot of things, like you know, even sort of, I don't know, alcoholics and stuff like that. It's the acceptance is the big thing. And is it you? Is it the perception of what other people think you should be like, and thus you become like that? This is the big thing, I'd have thought.
Yeah, it is. And because even for me, the amount of times that live shows, or even some like live streams that I've been on, or people that meet me for the first time, they say, wow, you don't look autistic. And then I always think, well, what does an autistic person look like? I mean, it's the strangest thing, that there's just such a perception out there, and it's just such a really horrible one. And whenever you don't fit a larger narrative, it can make existence that little bit harder. But That's what I want to do. That's the kind of ethos of the work that I do. I want life to be easier for people like me and their kids and families and everything else.
Right, because I know this the book we're going to talk about isn't your first book, it's your second book. But in your first book, you sort of do go into this, don't you, about the whole business of being a father as well.
Yeah, I know, because this is going to be a lot of times me telling your listeners, Barry, to pick their jaws up off the floor. Yes, I have a kid and I have a family and a job and everything else, but my narrative is different in that I'm an autistic dad to a non-autistic son, because all the literature, well, not all of it, but a large percentage of it are non-autistic parents talking about their autistic children. So I kind of gave my story from the opposite perspective of what it's like inside my mind, as opposed to a parent guessing what's going on in there.
Right.
So that was book one, which was Why Does Daddy Always Look So Sad? And that was the question my son asked to my mum, his granny, his mm-hmm. grandma. And that was, I suppose, the motivational speaker moment that I knew I had to do something. I couldn't hide my authentic self any longer and had to make peace with it. And that's led me right up to talking to you here.
See, that's the big thing, though, what you said. People look at that and people write books about it, but it's always written from the other side. It's, as you said, being a person who brought up an autistic child or related to it, never from the horse's mouth, so to speak. And this is why your books are so good, because they do go to that level and they take it from the side that people don't know. Other people can see and, oh, well, this is the best way to bring the child up, and this is the sort of 10 ways that can help and all this sort of stuff. They don't know. They're looking from the outside in. You're looking from the inside out. And that's what's so good about it. And that's why, yourself, as you said, doing these various seminars and stuff like that, you're able, which people say, oh, he can't communicate. Of course you can. You do. And you set places, things up that, and your own sort of companies and stuff like that to help with that. And that's why I think it's so good.
Yeah. And as far as all the stereotypes that exist about autistic people, that, yes, I've done a couple of TED Talks. I've written a couple of books. I've done a couple of tours. But what people don't always see from the public-facing point of view is that last week, my son and I actually went to an indoor water park, and I had to psychologically prepare myself for that sensory experience for about 5 days. Now, wow. I didn't really share it around everywhere on my social medias, where normally, you know what it's like in kind of marketing yourself and positioning yourself, that, everything's great, everything's wonderful, look how killing it I am. But I don't always have that approach, where I like to keep the authenticity, because I would be someone that typically would be labeled as, in air quotes, high functioning, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as going to a noisy indoor water park with water slides, then, probably I functioned quite lowly at that point. But, everyone should be able and free to function in a way that's most comfortable to them. Like, I always wonder, what's the yardstick as to what good functioning looks like?
Right.
Because a prime example probably was autistic. It can't be confirmed, but even the late, great Howard Hughes, who pretty much invented modern aviation, but was very rigid in his routines and how he managed things. And despite accumulating significant wealth and reputation and prestige, that he didn't always function very highly. And it's just a very flawed concept to me. It's just something I suppose I want to try and remove.
Mm. Yeah, people don't realise. You said it took you a week to prepare for it, because that was a big step for you. Yeah, that was something, especially, something obviously you wanted to do with your son. But, for you to do it, it wasn't just a simple thing. You had to prepare. You had to get yourself mentally ready to take that, and this is what people can't see. If people can't see something, like can't see an illness, it's like I remember my father having a handicap sticker, or my mother had a handicap sticker on the car, when she had my father with her, but she could not see, the Parkinson's. People wouldn't see it unless he stood there shaking. You wouldn't know. And it's, people see a disability, see an illness, but if they can't see it, they just don't realise.
Yeah, and I mean, being autistic is, I'm never going to argue the kind of disability kind of aspect of it, because I am not naive. I know that there are autistic people who may not live as independently as what I do, but the real sad thing is that the narrative is just driven by everybody else, is that it's the majority. The majority have a really scary power, and the majority tends to be able to decide who is disordered in comparison to them, whereas, the voices of minority groups and oppressed groups, which I would class autistic people as mm-hmm. one,
yep.
Don't always have a lead in the conversation.
Very true, very true. Well, after that first book, you've got a new book out now called Loving Your Place in the Spectrum. And basically, it's a sort of, how to make your life livable, but worthwhile, using your experience and I guess a lot of stories along the way.
Yeah, and I wanted to have almost like, not a manifesto, but almost as somewhat of a protest where autistic voices can be amplified, because around the world, it could be in the state where you live, it could be in the various countries where people are listening from, is that there are governmental bodies like panels, discussion groups, steering committees that are basically formed by parents and medical professionals to decide the future of autistic people. And if there was a committee, like a parliamentary or a governmental committee mm-hmm. that was focused upon sexual harassment toward women, and it was chaired entirely by men,
right,
then that would be torn down. But because groups that don't have autistic people on them are centered around the topic of autism, it's somehow societally acceptable. And for me, as a planet, it's not good enough. So what I wanted to have in Loving Your Place in the Spectrum was a collection, not my kind of experiences, but the experiences of others as well, to kind of amplify the point that we are not listened to enough.
Right. It's interesting. There's, just saying, I've been to my mother now. My mother's place just up the road from my mother, and I passed it on the way to her house. There's a theatre called the Chicken Shack. I think that's what it's called. And basically, that is run by autistic, handicapped, whatever you want to call it, people, children. They're all the actors in the thing. It's always sold out. They're on the board. They're on the committees and everything like that. And it shows you what people can do if you don't stereotype them, if you don't stick labels on them, and just let them be part of it. And I think that's what your book, is going for there.
It is, and there's such a presence in the media of autistic people, who are still with us and sadly no longer with us, even mm-hmm. the likes of Stanley Kubrick, mm-hmm. Einstein.
Yep.
There's so many talented autistic people in the world, and it's just whenever I think of the A word, the autism word,
yep.
people's kind of minds go to a darker and more unrealistic place where we are not capable of living life on our own terms, but I just want to say categorically that we should and we can.
Right, because I'm sure, and it varies obviously through age, from childhood to you graduated, you went to college, jobs, relationships. Do you cover all those different sort of age issues along the way?
Yeah, I do. And there's different kind of periods throughout the book that cover the whole lifespan. So I collected the most commonly asked questions from my first speaking tour and kind of made them into this book.
Ah, so good. Yeah.
These are kind of like the questions that people commonly ask about autism and autistic people, but the answers are given by autistic people, not parent-led and run or
right.
medical professional-led and run websites. So, yeah, it does cover all of those things like, diagnosis, know, going to college and university, no relationships, marriage, and even older age. So it covers the whole lifespan.
Do you find, like you said, you know, when you did your first tour and stuff like that, the questions you were being asked were mainly from these, you know, parents or people, families of the people, rather than the people themselves? Or did you actually have some people there ask you questions as well?
Absolutely, yeah, because the thing is, whenever I go to like a theatre or like a group or anything like that, is that the kids always ask the most questions because I'm like them and they're like me. So there's this like understanding that, yes, there's somebody that's older than us that is able to do things that maybe we don't believe yet that we can do. But I would have loved whenever I was 14 or 15 to be able to ask someone who's been on the journey, who's been there before, and it's a really therapeutic process.
Yeah.
I will give you the best question I was ever asked. So there was a young girl at the front row, and I took her question, and for my career, I was a social worker, mm-hmm. and the question I was asked was, Jude, do you know the way you were a social worker? And I said, yeah. And she said, is that like the dog warden, but only for people?
Oh.
And it brought the house down. It was the best question ever. And I thought, you know what? I did this job for nearly 10 years, and I never thought of it like
yeah.
that. But I suppose if you want a very clear black and white answer, I suppose it is.
It is. When you think about it, it's a very, very clever question. And yeah, very good. I see, Jesse, somebody to come out with something like that, they must have thought about that before. And yet there was nobody they could ask or talk to or even bring it up with until you came along.
Yeah, exactly. And the questions and answer sessions with all the kids, the teens, it's always really, really good fun. And that's my favorite part. That's my favorite part of touring. It's my favorite part of meeting new people is, you know, having, you know, so many wonderful questions and being able to give some words of encouragement because they're the words I wish I had 16 years ago.
Right. Did you get any sort of follow up with, you know, from people who were there and who contacted you afterwards and saying, you know, you really helped. I was worried about this or I had questions on this, and listening to you and, you know, hearing other people ask questions and stuff like that, I realized that I'm not on my own and other people have gone through the same sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my social media inboxes, they go crazy every day. And I still manage my own social medias. It's not something that I farm out to anybody mm-hmm. else because I love taking the questions. And yes, there have been a couple of messages that people had, you know, had went to see me the year before. And after me doing my kind of keynotes and stuff, they'd said a lot of the things that you said sounded very familiar to me. And then they actually went and were diagnosed themselves.
Right.
Probably the most famous example being in Loving Your Place in the Spectrum, where the narrator of the audiobook for the first book, a guy, Adrian Newcastle, he's a voice actor mm-hmm. who narrated the audiobook. And whilst he was narrating my audiobook, he thought, wow, this sounds very like me. And did go through the process and was diagnosed autistic himself and has actually narrated the audiobook for the second one as well. Yeah. So there's been a lot of good come out of it, out of both books.
Is that something that happens fairly often that somebody, you know, doesn't realize and then suddenly, I guess suddenly the boxes get ticked and they get a label attached to them?
Yeah, it does happen pretty often, and it's surprising because a lot of people think that there's somehow this autism epidemic and everything else. And it's absolutely nonsense because what happened over the decades was that there were the same amount of autistic people, but maybe 99% of them weren't getting the recognition, validation and support that they probably should have had. So a lot of people go through the experience, the journey as adults and the diagnostic journey, and they find it a very freeing experience and getting in touch with their identity. So it does happen quite frequently, Barry, it does.
Right. That's interesting, because it is something that they have to get in touch with themselves, find them, as we said at the beginning, you know, to accept it and find themselves, to find their true identity and not like putting on a facade, I guess, of you know, of what they think's expected of them. That must be one of the most important parts, to find themselves, their identity.
Yeah, it's vitally important. I mean, everyone needs a sense of self. Everyone needs a sense of, you know, who they are, because it's a very distressing thing. And I often thought as a teenager, you know, who am I? Not what do I have or what disorder do I have? It is, who am I? Who am I really? Because deep down, I knew the answer to the question. And the person who I was wasn't really able to come out and be authentic, because I was so afraid of judgment. Mm. I mean, you just have to look at the definition of autism. Look at all the negative words associated with it.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't want to be associated with that. So I had to invent a new character and live with that one
right.
for 25 years.
Right. It's, you know, you're saying sort of about the thing of taking your son to the swimming pool and stuff like that. What about, I mean, if you're flying to America, is that something that you're going to have to prepare yourself for? You know, that must be pretty, I mean, I found it pretty horrendous. So it must, for you, you're going to have to do a lot of mental planning and finding, getting yourself in a position that you'll be able to cope with it.
100%, because airports are sensory hell for me.
Oh,
where there's a lot of things that you have to do that I don't like. Like the sound of like suitcase wheels on floors, and then having to be frisked, because if you're 6'5" and have a beard, you're always going to get randomly searched.
Oh, right.
I always find that where right. it's just a collage of people just being hectic, running around. It's a very, very scary place. And given the new restrictions and stuff, I have to go on my own. Like, I can't bring like Penny or Ethan or anybody with me. So I have to fly solo, and I have about 7 weeks to prepare for that.
Right.
So that's what I'm kind of doing right now.
Yeah. See, I knew I was going to, I get searched because I've got a false knee, and you know, it's going to set off the alarm. every time. So you know, come over here, stand this side, and you've got to be frisked and everything. If once upon a time, evidently, used to be able to get through with a doctor's letter, but that was a long, long while ago, and obviously things have changed since then. But yeah, the arm goes off, here we go again.
Yeah, and that just happened.
I remember I was coming back when I was, I must have been in my early 20s, I was coming back from Spain. I've been on holiday in Spain, and I'm looking round on the plane, and I reckon I was the only person under about 45 on the plane. You can guarantee you're going to get stopped at customs. Yeah, I had to look around, and sure enough, of course, I was pulled in customs. But you're right, you know, when you sort of, you say, yeah, that's all with the beard and everything like that. And it's something, at least you are, even though you're sort of fully not prepared for it, it's not gonna shock you if it does happen, sort of thing. So you can sort of, I guess it's not putting up a shield for it, but you can sort of prepare yourself to face it, like preparing for a punch or something like that.
Yeah, I can't, and that's the best I can do. Like, I just sort of try and visualize everything as much as I humanly and possibly can, and hope for the best.
Your trip, obviously, you know, with the new book, etc., you know, trip to coming over to America and doing the talks and that there, is this because the market's there, and do you think this is a market that I can, you know, I can share my issues with? Because America hides this sort of thing. America, for instance, hardly had any coverage, and hasn't in the last, as long as I've been here, 20 odd years, any coverage of the Paralympics, for instance. You know, it's almost like people are hidden away in America, like they used to be in the sort of Victorian times. You know, anybody that wasn't quite right was sort of stuck in an asylum, or hidden in a room, or sent to the country or something like that. Do you expect there to be this sort of non-acceptance up to a point in America?
I would agree with that, Barry, because a lot of the groups that I speak to is even whenever I'm in conversation with people, like even whether it's live or even on Zoom, like people find it such a freeing experience. And I've asked that exact same question that you've just put to me. And I've said, well, you know, why are you so worried? And parents are generally worried about their insurance, you know, if the child's school.
Oh, crikey, yes, yeah, yeah.
And everything else, because, I mean, in the UK and Ireland, I mean, we have the National Health Service
right
here, which is good to a point, but I mean, in the US, the system is way, way more cutthroat.
Tell me.
I mean, that's where I come in, where, you know, I like to come and at least show that autistic people can grow up and live happy and successful lives,
yeah,
and that parents can be heroes for their autistic kids. And it's really, really easy to do.
Well,
and that's what I like to bring.
I'm so pleased you are coming, and I'm sure so pleased not only will be sharing with people in America, but you've been able to share with the audience on this show. So what I'm going to do now, anyway, Jude, is to hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about yourself and, of course, your books.
Oh, thank you so much, Barry. And I just want to say to all of you, thank you so much for coming along and listening to me chat. I operate very much a global open door policy. So you can find me, you can ask me your questions. I've judemorrow.com. That's my website. Very simple. JudeMorrow.com. And I am active on every social media platform, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm under Jude Morrow on all of them. And as far as my books, they're both published by Beyond Words. Very proud of that fact. And both Why Does Daddy Always Look So Sad and my new book, Loving Your Place in the Spectrum, is available at all major online retailers. And please, please leave a review, ask your questions, and exercise that open door policy. I got it all out.
Well, we finally got Facebook back today. So after it being out all yesterday, so I'm sure people might be able to do that now. But Jude, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It's been a great pleasure chatting to you.
Oh, and thank you so much for having me on. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
My pleasure, thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Jude Morrow. And as he said, you can find him on judemorrow.com. JudeMorrow. JudeMorrow.com. And been talking about himself and his two books. The first one, Why Does Daddy Always Look So Sad? And then his new one, which is Loving Your Place in the Spectrum. Really interesting, really well worth reading. Just to hear from the other side, from the actual people. And I'm sure I'm sure a lot of people in America, when he gets here for his tours, are going to really find it interesting. And I'm sure very, very, very helpful, because people just don't understand. And as he said, people just don't get a say. The people who are the other side of the mirror are the ones that get asked the questions. And this is coming from somebody from the actual core of the issue. Anyway, that's it. I will be back again tomorrow, but until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Now, before I play it, I always say that, and people say, well, what's that? Because after I do One Thing Left to Say, I bring in the outro music. And you listen to the start of the outro music, then you'll understand. Anyway, as I said, I've got one thing left to say. Don't forget.